It is far. It is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Hello and welcome into Nosebleeds, WFUV Sports' baseball podcast. I'm Maddie Bamonte. I am joined here today with Will Talent, Evan Harkin. You know, we've just kind of wrapped up almost this first week of Major League Baseball. There's been some highs and there's been some lows. And there's been some really, really bad lows here in New York for one of the teams that I may support. For the other side, I'm glad that they're starting off strong. So before we unpack all of the highs and lows, Will, Evan, how are you guys doing today?
Guys, I'm fantastic. It's Friday. It's formal Friday for us later tonight at Michelangelo's. That should be a lot of fun, but really excited to just talk some ball with you guys, two knowledgeable baseball personalities, and can't wait to just unpack this first week of Major League Baseball with y'all.
Yeah, also really excited about the formal. Also excited about the earthquake we had. Never been a part of an earthquake before. I guess being a part of an earthquake's a thing, but it
definitely is. Yeah.
It is.
You know, the Mets win, so obviously we need an earthquake. Something's got to happen. Something gives.
It's the earthquake, then we're getting the solar eclipse on Monday, so we're just getting all the
weird Earth stuff going
on. Earth stuff going on right out the gate, which is, you know, an interesting start to the season.
And you can't forget the torrential three-day downpours and the wind.
The hurricane. It might as well have been
ridiculous.
I really want to chalk it up to the fact that the Mets won one game to start off opening week, and that is the reason why all these natural disasters are happening. So let's talk about the Mets to start things off, because, oh boy, has it been awful to watch them play. You know, it comes with the territory of being a Mets fan that you deal with the lows. Usually we get it in July. Like, I get a little bit of a nice start to my season, and then July comes and it looks worse for wear. But we came right out the gate. I can't even say swinging because we weren't. We came out the gate. We swept a series by the Milwaukee Brewers, then took on the Tigers, winning just one game against them. Evan, you are beat reporting for the Mets this season for WFUV Sports. I want you to give us your very strong initial thoughts to this team as you have seen it thus far.
It's scary because I think the problem is their core, which is the scariest part. It's the guys you paid very recently a lot of money to lead the team. Specifically, Jeff McNeil and Brandon Nimmo. I'm point those two out very specifically. I mean, there was a point where McNeil, Lindor, and Nimmo were all had one hit each and had like 20 at bats. So you have your top three players. Their best players right now are Pete Alonso and Francisco Alvarez, who's a beast. He's been surprising me so much since the season started. Could be the best catcher in baseball, I'd say. Him and Adley Rutschman right now, but it's a scary sign for the Mets because the exact guys you want to lead the team are the ones holding them down.
You know, I hear a lot of Mets fans in panic, and I totally understand. 0-5 is just, you know, to be real, totally unacceptable.
Yeah.
Like, that just can't happen with the kind of contracts dished out to, as you said, Evan, core players.
Yeah.
And let's go a little further. Pete Alonso, obviously the hero the other night, but Francisco Lindor.
Yeah.
He's not even batting over 100 right now.
Nope.
But the one thing I can say for all Mets fans out there is that it is so early, and to try not to panic because your offense is good. You have a good offense. There's obviously some holes in that lineup, but that could be filled. However, this will not last the whole season. There is no way this team, with the kinds of names, and not just names, baseball players in general, there is just absolutely no way in my mind that they will stay this cold for the whole season. Let's look at the Yankees from last year. That was an example of a team that kind of stayed cold all season long, but even at their best, they were competent. you're going to get more out of this Mets team. Because as like with the Yankees last year, Aaron Judge goes down, the whole team is just derailed. Why did they get Juan Soto? To fill that void. The Mets don't really have that because they have a lot of guys that can complement Alonso and Francisco Lindor. So, yes, right now, Mets fans, you should be pissed and you should be very disappointed. But it's very early. All of this really happened in March, too. Not even in April. We have the entire month of April and then five more months after that. I want to say something, though. The starting pitching is not getting enough credit because of how bad the offense has been. Sean Manaea has looked like an absolute hidden gem for them. Adrian Hauser loved that trade with Stevens coming over. You know, so he brings his guy from Milwaukee, and he's been a great fifth starter. He had a great first start. So the starting pitching, saving the Mets as of right now, but panic mode, understandable, but it's early.
And I was going to talk about the starting pitching because usually that's where, honestly, going into it, that's where I was really more concerned. I was not as concerned with the hitting, thinking that this is what the season was going to look like so far. But it really has shocked me in terms of what the glaring spots are for this team. Jose Buto did great in his start for what I expected out of him. And even like seeing the rest of what the pitching has been, the bullpen has been better than what I expected, because there really is a low bar with this Mets bullpen every single year for me. Like there is really no kind of people that work like well together in Mets history. Like they just do not work well. And Edwin Diaz making his return this year was electric, seeing what they're doing with him. Brooks Raley looked pretty good this year as well. It is, like, Evan, the hitting that really has been bothering me. And you talk about McNeil and you talk about Nimmo. And I think with McNeil in particular, there is so much. I'm really kind of upset with him just because I've been watching his swing and it does not look good at all right now. I don't know what he has messed up with his mechanics, but he just does not look comfortable at the plate to me. I don't know what it is. He really bothers me in this lineup right now. I believe they dropped him in the lineup the other day, didn't they? Yep. He played seventh.
Yeah, he was hitting cleanup for the start of the season, and then it was like, okay, this guy cannot hit cleanup clearly.
And so it's just like trying to figure this out really this early on when you have guys like I didn't buy into this whole Marte thing. I didn't buy into the fact that Marte was going to be this superstar this year. You cannot rebound from injuries in the way that this man has been injured and expect him to be this all-star player for the team. He was not going to be that.
I honestly really didn't like that contract from the beginning because he was like 32 years old.
Yeah.
He got a lot out of him in his first year, but my main concern when he signed that contract was not that first year. It was last year, this year, and then next year, and now we're seeing that happen. He's older now. He still has the speed, but once you hit 35 years old, 34, 35 years old, your body really changes. We see it all the time with athletes in all different kinds of sports. So they're kind of biting the bullet with Starling Marte. It made sense at the time when they brought him in because that team won 100 games in his first year that he was there. Yep. So still a very valuable piece out there to have, still a very solid defender. But to go back to Jeff McNeil, I didn't even know that they were batting him fourth. That is outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy has never in his entire career, you know, signaled that he is a number four guy.
No.
You put a Jeff McNeil in a number four spot if he's your only option. Mm-hmm. And now one thing too, and then this is no knock or discredit to him, because I really liked him when he was with the Yankees, and he definitely deserved the position that he's in now. But you got to also keep in mind, if you're a Mets fan, Carlos Mendoza is in his first year as a major league manager, and he already had to eat a suspended game because of some antics in the first series. We could even talk about that too for a second. That was kind of crazy. That was just, you know, exactly how you don't want to start your season. Rhys Hoskins, did he slide over the base? And was it a little bit of foul play? For sure. But we got to kind of draw the line here. To start this beef that early against a team that's, in my opinion, really not going to be in it at all this year in the Milwaukee Brewers, and a team in the Mets that has an outside shot, not a great way to start. So overall, offense, defense, pitching not so much, morale, things are just not clicking just yet for the Mets, and we'll see what they put together. I have a lot of faith in Carlos Mendoza. He's a great baseball mind, so we'll see what happens.
You know, I'll play a little devil's advocate to the suspension only because there's a big contrast. I can't obviously say how I think the season's going to play out and make a comparison to Buck, for example, right now, only being 6-7 games in. But what frustrated me a lot about Buck last year is his unwillingness to really back up the players getting hit. And they got hit often
by
pitches.
That's so true. Yeah.
And so, yes, it is not a good look to do it so early on in the season, but it was pretty refreshing to see a manager step up to the plate and be like, you know, my guy didn't mean to do it or all this stuff, or you saw what went on, all this stuff. Like having a guy right there in the corner doing a Boone situation where they're really backing their guys up was nice because it took Showalter months to even get out of the dugout to be like, hey, like, can we talk about this? Like, can we figure this out? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm a little undecided how I feel on the situation of the suspension. I obviously, after hearing what went on and seeing it, and it's really hard to say because it really didn't look like a pitch he was really throwing at him, to be honest with you. Like, we can make the argument all day long, but I don't know. It was nice in a way to see it and refreshing to see him step up for the Mets after all that happened over the past two seasons.
And I absolutely agree that that was missing with Buck Showalter. Mm-hmm. Obviously, two different kinds of managers, two different kinds of personalities. And yes, for a team that got plunked as much as the Mets did, I can get behind that, especially because you have a lot of guys that got plunked last year returning this year. You got to kind of put your foot down and be like, hey, like, this is just not going to happen. But at the end of the day, too, with the suspension, I see why it happened, because if Major League Baseball does nothing there, that can't happen as well. So, and then I don't remember who it was, but somebody got suspended on the Brewers as well. Like, they have to go both ways. What, I believe somebody did get suspended from them. But or maybe not.
I don't think anyone did, to be honest with you.
That's a little crazy.
That they did.
That's not good, because that's not going both ways. Yeah. You know, so I understand the Brewers didn't throw anybody and the Mets did, but unfortunately, Major League Baseball needs to step in and do something, and then hopefully it just kind of gets, it's over. It's over now.
It's over.
And it has to be over, because that was a terrible start to the season. Get right now and then just push forward.
I think the principle of, like, doing it, as you're saying, because Buck wouldn't, and backing your guys is really good, but I thought the way they executed it was
so bad.
Like, you couldn't have done it worse. I mean, you have Rhys Hoskins up in the first inning. You can hit him right then with a starter and not Johan Ramirez, who's your wildest pitcher. Like, I don't even know if he meant to hit him. He's such a wild pitcher.
He said that he didn't after, and that was the funniest part.
He's such a wild pitcher that, like, it shouldn't even be him. And you did it after Rhys Hoskins won the game. Like, he had four RBIs. He hit a home run. And then you're going to go out there and do that. And then Rhys Hoskins wins the game, and you get your manager suspended and reliever suspended. So it looks really bad from your side.
One thing just to correct myself, because I really didn't know who got suspended. Nobody on the Brewers got suspended. Johan Ramirez's three-game suspension did get bumped down to two. Yeah. So that's fair.
He did pitch the next day, too.
He's on appeal. So.
Yeah. One more thing I want to highlight before we move over across town. I'm still confused what's going on with JD Martinez in this whole minor league assignments going on. So you look at this lineup and you see, after murmurings, JD Martinez is getting, this is my favorite, the way that people have been describing it, getting closer. There's no like, he's here.
Is it right in front of him?
I guess it's right in front of him, and he's getting closer to being able to help. So they said before yesterday, Thursday's doubleheader, Mendoza said that he's going to join the minor league affiliates as soon as Friday. Not naming which one he's going to join, just that he's going to join a minor league affiliate as soon as Friday. So they don't know where he's going. He could go to St. Lucie. He could go to Binghamton. He's been in St. Lucie for a bit now, still rehabbing, doing whatever he's doing. Or he could go to Syracuse and figure out what's going on there. I'm just like, maybe I'm just not sold on DJ Stewart, so maybe that's why I'm kind of much more excited for this move. But what they're doing right now off the bat and trying to figure out, I'm still very unclear of what the heck is going on with Martinez right now.
Well, the best way, the best angle I could take on this, because it is very confusing, but there are some, I guess, boxes we can check off here. Mm-hmm. Number one, did not have a full spring training. He's 35 years old. Actually, I believe he's 36 now. Yeah, he turned 36 in August of last year. So he's 36 years old. Delayed spring training for him. I would say very stressful offseason. You know, I obviously can't speak for him, but the fact that he was an all-star at 35 years old on a one-year deal, and it took him until March to get a contract from anyone, that's pretty stressful because you are obviously a more than competent bat in any lineup. We're looking at an all-star in the Dodgers lineup, a team that won over 100 games last year. So, you know, that's not a very easy place to get consistent at bats, and he was an all-star at 35 years old. So in that regard, I see it. You got to let him build himself up. Once again, kind of like with Marte, the body starts really doing different things on you when you hit that age. So you got to give him time. And also, why I don't mind it for the Mets, I understand Mets fans want to see him. You're paying him $12, $13 million for this 1 year. Mm-hmm. And if the Mets aren't that great by July, he's probably gone. But that's where I'm going to end my topic here for JD Martinez. As a Mets fan, you should want him to feel as right as possible, because if in the event the Mets are out of it by July and it's deadline time and it's buyers or sellers, he will have hopefully the most amount of value possible. And if you rush him back, then there's no value. And then it's going to be like, why are we paying this guy $12 million instead of $12 million for JD Martinez? We can get two prospects for that.
Yeah.
That's where the Mets are at right now. They, to me personally, are not looking to compete in this season, even though they have the team that they could make a push for a wild card spot. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're there because of how good their farm system is. That's something that I don't honestly remember ever saying about the Mets, except when DeGrom and Syndergaard and Darnot were top prospects, and they didn't even have like a top system then. Now, they have, I would say, if they can put together some really good trades from some really good signings they made, including JD Martinez this offseason, that farm system could creep into the top five and maybe even the top three come season's end.
Yeah, and that's something the Mets have really never done in our lifetime, build up from the farm system. They do this thing where they grab a JD Martinez, although I thought that was a good pickup. Like you said, he's 36 years old. He's on a one-year deal. They get guys they got last year, Verlander, you know, you get guys that are a little bit too old past their prime and they don't play well together because they have 1 year together. So it would be really good for the Mets to take a different approach, exactly like you're saying. And like you said, JD Martinez, over 100 RBIs last year, tied for 12th. Like, this guy should 100% be in the lineup, 100% getting at-bats for the Mets. I would say I would want him to come back a little sooner than I think you're saying. Well, I think that getting him in that lineup would really change it. Like, they're missing this guy in the lineup to me, because they not have anyone to hit in them that they have base runners right now. But like we said before, they will. And they don't have anyone to hit them in right now.
It's, you know, looking at this lineup and seeing what it could become is exciting. But right now where we are, seeing, like, even the walk-off win, our first win, with Pete Alonso tying it and then Tyrod Taylor walking it off, it's really hard to look at this lineup and really be like, this is what I've been waiting for. This is what we should be spending our money on. And you know what? Kudos to Steve Cohen for saying the other day that he sees this as a philanthropic endeavor for owning the Mets, to give back to the people. He's not really giving my happiness back yet, but hopefully we'll be getting it soon. But let's shift gears a little bit to across town, because the Yankees have just been stellar to open up this year so far. 6-1, although they are current, are they still currently down right now?
They are 1-0 top of the eighth.
1-0 top of the eighth. Their home opener today, but they just look so fun. And it's really, I think it's honestly like stupid to put the words fun next to a George Steinbrenner team, because man, it's honestly so refreshing to see like Juan Soto out there, backwards hat, chain out, t-shirts on in the dugout. It's to me.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Yes. I'm sorry for cutting you off. That was
so
awesome to
fun.
See. I'm sorry.
It was so fun. And it literally, like, I can only imagine how George must feel in his grave right now watching that. But man, do I wish in the back of my mind I was a Yankee fan to watch this go down right now.
Let me just say, and this is with all due respect to the boss, but George is gone. George has been gone for almost 15 years now. So it's been long overdue for something like, I cannot believe I'm saying this sentence, but the fact that they met Marcus Stroman can wear a special graphic tee. It's like not even team issued over his uniform and just be himself. Mm-hmm. The Yankees still with the facial hair thing that we'll see about that. But one thing I think that the Yankees really came short on as I want to say the decade switched from the 2000s to the 2010s was really just sticking with the times. Obviously, what makes the Yankees and the fan base is that a lot of the fans love the tradition. It's something to love. It's admirable because it's successful. However, we're living in different times now. We need to evolve with the times. And if you want to win in these times, you got to evolve with the times because the Stone Age philosophies were, you know, we're hundreds of years past that, you know. But this team is fun. I'm a Yankee fan as well, but I refrain from saying anything because it's so early and I see it all the time. And we all know the rep that the Yankee fans get. And I try very hard to not be that kind of fan. So I have to curtail my excitement, but I also understand that it's so early. Let's go back to 2022 for a second. This team was like 45-18 and then completely crashed and burned in the second half, made it to the ALCS, but that second half in 2022 was so evident as to why they got swept seamlessly by the Astros. So this team is fun. This team is exciting. This team has more character. This team also, on a baseball level, has something outside of Aaron Judge in Juan Soto, an exciting young player that, honestly, you can argue, agree to disagree here, does even more than Aaron Judge does for the Yankees.
I love that take, and I was thinking that as well. I mean, Aaron Judge, one of the best hitters in the league, one of the best hitters the league's ever seen, he kind of didn't imprint the younger players the way Juan Soto already has. I mean, I think because the reason is Aaron Judge is so big and so powerful and he uses a 40-ounce bat.
He's also a lot more laid back as a person,
right,
too.
As a human, yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot more lead by example, not lead by tell, which Juan Soto obviously is the most confident showboating
guy
ever.
Kind of need both of that, though, exactly. in a locker room, clubhouse setting. Yeah.
But I think Juan Soto, because of his plate discipline, which is the best I've ever seen anyone in my life, like he can tell you if the ball was inches away from the zone. He looks directly at the umpire. He knows right away. I think the plate discipline is what is feeding the rest of this lineup. They're watching that. You see it with Volpe. It's making him so much better. You see it with Oswaldo Cabrera taking these pitches that they would have whiffed at last year. And I think a big reason you see with Anthony Rizzo, too, he does the Soto toe tap when he gets two strikes now. So just taking little fundamental pieces from now they have two of some of the greatest hitters in the MLB. So you get to take from both and it's just feeding down the lineup. The energy is infectious right now and it's exciting.
They like I really like that take too, Evan, that we haven't seen that on a Yankees team. Mm-hmm. 1-9, that was the philosophy. Power, 1-9.
Oh my God.
You just don't win championships like that. I like what they have constructed right now. 2-5, 2-6 is your power. Mm-hmm. 2-4 is your, that's your dog power right there. 1-7-8-9, contact, approach, allow 2-6 to drive in 1-7-8-9. That's how you win games. You can't just always go for the long ball. I know that's been the philosophy in Major League Baseball, but look at the teams that have won the World Series since the home run has really come back since 2019. Every World Series winner since then has not been power or bust. If you want to make the argument about the Rangers, sure, you can. Corey Seager is one of the more complete hitters in Major League Baseball. Yeah. He is not a strictly power guy. Marcus Semien, complete hitter. You know, so the Yankees finally have some balance in the lineup. And one more note before we get it back to you, Matty. 1-for-12 in the series, Juan Soto against Arizona. On base every single game. I will take that all the time. Obviously, you want him to do some damage in production because he's got it in there. But he was on base every single game to start the season. Come on.
For
like,
me,
that's awesome.
What was so missing last season was Judge had nobody backing him up either in front of him or behind him in that lineup. Now you have Juan Soto to go right before him. You have a guy that even if he's not hitting, he's getting on base. And that's so important to set him up. So Judge doesn't feel like going out there to the plate and he's like, I have nothing to do. Like, I have nothing to do at this point. What am I gonna be able to do for this team? I have nobody in front of me, nobody behind me that's ready to get on base for me. And so finally, we're getting the load lightened off of his shoulders. And I think that's so refreshing because it translates to the rest of this team. There's more flexibility with these people hitting. Volpe hitting good because you get that load taken off of you in that front half of this batting lineup that you can take a breath when you get towards the back half and be like, okay, we're doing something in the front. I can slow down. I don't feel like I have to now pick up the slack from the front. So everybody just working well together. And I will eat my words too. I was still really unhappy about Marcus Stroman going to the Yankees. I always have had my opinions on the guy in terms of personality, but he looks great out there, especially like today. Like, he looks great. He gets the home opener start. He has struck out 6 across 6 so far. I just, honestly, he has surprised me because I knew he was a very talented pitcher from what I was seeing with the Mets. I just thought he was a little bit sporadic at times with his pitching, as were most Mets pitchers at the time. They have really kind of settled. I also want to give kudos to some of the Yankees bullpen, and specifically Hamilton, who had a great game the other day, throwing about 2 2/3 scoreless and struck out 4. He has not allowed a run in 2024 so far. He struck out 43.8% of his people. He looks great for them. It to me looks like they have a guy who can line up to be their closer eventually, because that I think another thing, you look at that rotation for the Yankees, and that was another concern, is those starting pitchers going to pick it up? Is Rodon going to pick things up? Is Cortez going to look good this year? And then you have to worry, is the bullpen going to be able to hold back these things? Because hitting is not a problem for these Yankees right now. And that is, I think, something that they can really put to the side and feel really good about. But their pitching has also really impressed me. And that's something that I think is going to help them for a long time now.
In our Yankees preview with myself, Nick Palmer, and Lou Orlando, that was our, like, biggest thing, was that the bullpen was going to be the biggest question mark of the entire season. And it's already at that point. We're 7 games in. Clay Holmes, he's a great pitcher. I do not like him in the 9th inning. I have not liked him in the 9th inning.
No, I don't either.
Since he took over for Chapman, he had that one stretch when Chapman was hurt and he replaced him and he was great.
Yeah.
And then when they put him back in that role, he hasn't been the same pitcher since. I can go back and forth with anyone all day long on that. Clay Holmes puts too many guys on base to be considered a closer. How about, we're talking about taking the pressure off of Aaron Judge, how about we put Clay Holmes in the 7th, in the 8th inning, a lot less pressure to get the 3 outs, because when the 3 outs are made, it's, we go to the next inning, not, oh, I need to get these 3 outs to win the game. I was a big proponent of Brian Cashman making a last-minute push for Emmanuel Clase on the Cleveland Guardians, because don't really know where the Guardians are going to go. That could be a big trade deadline move in July if the Guardians are, let's say, kind of in the same boat as the Mets, where they're kind of on the fence. That's where I see them right now. Good start to the season, but I don't really know. They're usually kind of inconsistent, but still kind of like the Mets. It's kind of weird how similar the Mets are to the Guardians now that I'm thinking about it, but they are definitely a team that I could see not quite be in it, and Class A could be one of those names that's out the door. The Yankees have the prospects. They have the major league talent to send over to Cleveland to get a guy like Class A, 26 years old, proven closer. He's already passed 200 saves at 26 years old. That's unbelievable. Yeah. That's the kind of guy they need in the ninth inning, and I'm happy you bring up Ian Hamilton as well, Matty. Definitely one of those X factors in the bullpen, a cash god find, as we'd like to call it. And this year, that find to me, Nick Birdie. Loved that signing from the beginning. I think it was a minor league deal, and it exceeded a certain dollar figure if he made the majors. I loved it. I thought he had a chance to make that roster right out of spring training, and he did. 2.45. Oh, I'm sorry. He has a 0 ERA in 3 games played, and he already has a win in 2 1/3 innings pitched. But these are the guys that Cashman finds, and he continues to find. But you do not find a closer like, no one's like Mariano, but someone you can throw out there and say, 3 outs every single time, I can just kick back and watch him do his thing.
And I'm very confident that Clay Holmes isn't that guy right now. Like, he goes up there and it's like walk, and it's like, all right, 3-2 count.
One run, two run games.
He gets the double play. He'll get the double play, and you're like, oh, okay. I guess he's a double play pitcher. That's what everyone says about him, but that's not what you want to see. What you want to see what Ian Hamilton brought. It was really impressive. He looked like he was throwing wiffle balls up there the way they were swinging at them. And I liked his aroma. Like, he looked like the closer out there. He was, like, chewing on seeds the whole time, like, not really fazed by anything, eyes locked on the hitter.
Very intense guy.
Yeah, very intense. I think trying him in the ninth wouldn't be an issue with me at all. Maybe switching them up just a little bit.
Yeah.
And another thing I wanted to point out is how the Yankees are manufacturing runs, which they haven't done since, like, Derek Jeter's been on the team. If you saw Gleyber Torres stole second on Juan Soto's game-winning RBI, if he doesn't steal second, he's probably only on third. Maybe the Yankees lose that game. They also had a couple bunts that led to really bad defensive performances by the Astros, but seeing small ball from them is just a great sign.
And we talk about these fines for low costs, but then you have a high cost that's kind of looming in the back of your mind now in Juan Soto, who is asking, well, first off, is a Scott Boras client, so we know where this is going.
We know how loud the noise is.
He is looking to find a deal for next season to start at roughly $500 million is the asking price. Obviously, he is probably going to go much higher than that. But we'll get into what we expect out of this. But I have to say once again, I'm going to say this every single time I'm on this podcast because I'm sick of it and I have to put people in their place. Mets fans, stop talking about Juan Soto. We need to shut up and focus, keep our heads down and look at our own team. There is no way we should be expecting to pay Juan Soto all this money when we cannot win more than one game this week. So I don't want to hear it. I really don't want to hear it. I'm over it. I'm sick of it. It has been 1 week. First loss of the year. Everybody flooding the comments. Well, thank God we're getting Juan Soto next year. Shut up. No, not with this attitude. We're not. Like, I don't care. So
not starting 0-5.
No, we are not getting in with an 0-5 record. So I don't know. I am very interested to see where this kind of goes because from what we're seeing out the gate with Soto, really looks like a favorable contract for me. For most teams that need a quick guy to move into their lineup, I did not predict that Soto was going to merge into the Yankees lineup so effortlessly, so quickly, to be honest with you.
Well, he fits seriously like a glove. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was everything that they have been missing, I want to say, since Aaron Boone came over as manager. And now we're in year 7 of that tenure. They have never had, honestly, in my entire life watching the Yankees, I've never seen a hitter quite like Juan Soto. Got to watch A-Rod, even though it was at the end. Got to watch Jeter, and now with Aaron Judge. Seen a lot of good baseball players, but none quite like Juan Soto. Now, to go as far as Ohtani-type money, that's a little absurd. To say that, that's a very Boras kind of thing to say, but I hope Juan understands that Shohei Ohtani is getting an additional $35 million a year, if you want to break it down that way, even though with the deferrals, we're going to get technical. Let's just not. If we look at it as though he's getting paid $35 million to play on both sides of the ball to equal 70 per year, it's because he will perennially get Cy Young and MVP votes, and not MVP votes because he was so good on the mound. So Juan Soto, yes, he will. I'll say it right now. He will surpass Mike Trout's position player contract. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think a good baseline is 500.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some teams out there that, let's take a look at the Seattle Mariners. I know that they got to sign J-Rod. He's still in his pre-arbitration years.
Yeah.
There's other teams to look out for other than the Mets. Not really concerned with the Dodgers. But like you said, Matty, Mets fans, yes, got to kind of reel it in just a little bit. Because if the Yankees do put together an amazing season, I do find it very hard for him to leave the Bronx
mm-hmm.
because of how much he's already enjoyed mm-hmm. being a Yankee. It's very hard. I think he's aware that anybody will throw him the money, so it's pretty much up to him. He really enjoys so far being a Yankee. We only have 7 games to work with on that opinion right now, but going as far as 700, I see is really unrealistic.
I just think, and maybe this is just me speculating because of how I've seen a lot of Boris contracts have gone as of late, or how Boris negotiations have gone, is I'm just really interested to see how, like, I obviously agree with the concept that I think Soto enjoys being a Yankee and will enjoy being a Yankee this year. I really don't know how much influence Scott Boras has in these decisions, because we've seen, this is obviously a completely different situation, but we've seen how the Pete Alonso negotiations have gone with Scott Boras. And Pete Alonso has said he likes being a New York Met, like all of this stuff. I like being a New York Met. I like being with the Mets, and still no deal has been done.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me wonder, not even necessarily Soto, but what exactly Scott Boras is doing on this contract negotiation side that we're going to see with this huge deal that is going to come about. I'm really just kind of curious to know how it's going to play out, because I think the Scott Boras clients and contracts have been a little bit ridiculous, to say the least, over the past couple of years, how he has inflated a lot of his contracts and just what you are able to get out of it.
The market in general. Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see how it plays out later in the season. And looking even later down the line, we can talk a little bit about how Oakland officially has announced that on Thursday, the Athletics are going to leave Oakland after the 2024 season. They are going to play 3 years in a AAA stadium in West Sacramento. They are ending their 56-year tenure in East Bay. They had 4 World Series championships during that time, and the current team looks worse than ever. And I saw footage of the Tropicana in Las Vegas, where it will be demolished to make way for the new stadium eventually. This is just a scenario that is so sad, because you look every single day to see how low can you get that attendance in the Coliseum right now. And it somehow gets lower and lower by the day. And I can't fathom to see it, just to the sport. I think it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's like the A's are like breaking up with you if you're an A's fan. Like, I honestly feel really bad for their fan base. Like, it just keeps getting worse and worse every year. I do think it's a good move for, let's say, 5 years, 10 years for them to be in Vegas. We see all these teams that are in California, because there's 5 teams in every league in California, going to Vegas. I think that will eventually be good for them. But for such a historic franchise, too, like, it's not a franchise that just can't be mentioned when you mention the MLB. It's one of the top ones. So just really sad to see them completely go downhill.
I agree with that. I think the A's will eventually be right up there with whoever, you know. By that time, is that Astros run going to end? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But hypothetically, say the Astros are still up there, I could very much see the A's getting right back up there with the Astros, because their owner does have a lot of money to spend. But John Fisher, man, the only... I'm having trouble putting my words together, because this guy is just such a travesty to the sport of baseball and to Major League Baseball in general. And honestly, shame on Major League Baseball for really not stepping in at all. I don't really know if he understands the kind of damage he's doing to that city. That is all that city had left. Now, I know what's been going on in that city at a very baseline level. It has not, you know, as a city in general, it's not as, you know, what it used to be. It's definitely a rough area. It's not getting better as well. But the A's was what a lot of people had left of their city. Mm-hmm. And John Fisher just ripped them out of Oakland. I mean, to even go as far. Did you guys see the thing about the paper?
I was going
to
bring that up, yeah.
Like the, I want to assume that was an employee, like, just notice to keep note of. To emphasize not mentioning the city of Oakland while you're still there is garbage.
For 3 years.
That is garbage. And then that I can kind of understand, you know, you're going to be the Sacramento A's for 3 years, at whatever. But this year, to not promote that you are the Oakland Athletics is just how is he not humiliated?
Yeah,
I know it's a business endeavor, and it eventually will probably work out for them. But who knows? He could have turned his back on so many people, and he has no idea. 3 years in a stadium that, sure, it sits 14,000 people if four of those 14,000 sit on the grass in the outfield. It's just garbage. I know I'm getting kind of animated, but it's garbage. It's so disrespectful. And it's just, he does not acknowledge what that team has meant to that community for decades, for generations. It's just awful all the way around.
And you see the backlash from the fans in particular from the boycotts we saw going on last season when the deal was first brought up because of their negotiations, to now the start of the season where they've had an attendance of like 3,000 one game, which was insane. And then you bring up the paper, which to me was so heartbreaking to honestly read. Like, it was obviously posted as like this, like, can you believe this thing, like, joke. It's so sad when you actually read it, and genuinely
it's horrible.
It's people's home. And then from the team being like, we will no longer refer to ourselves as Oakland. We will be the A's or the Athletics.
So adamant about it.
And they're so adamant about it. And it's like, it's erasing a part of history to me when you really think about it. Like, because you know, when they go to Las Vegas, there's going to be an entire rebrand. And I know that this owner will want nothing more than to bury what Oakland has been, what it has represented, or what it looked like for years, which is so, so sad. That I can't even think about what the future is going to look like for their organization, knowing that this is how they're treating it while it's still technically in Oakland.
They may not be the Athletics by 2030. Like, no. They should be the Jokers going to Vegas. So, you know, but I just... another thing I think we need to mention on this topic, sending Esturi Ruiz down after he batted 430, and then your reasoning was he doesn't get on base enough. Oh my God, dude. He has looked like such a better hitter than he did last year. He led the American League in stolen bases, and your reasoning was, I know the manager, Mark Kotze, you know, there's only so much he actually can say, you know, and can't say. He's in a really weird spot, too, because he's got to answer all these questions. And who knows if he is actually being honest about it. He's just trying to keep his job, you know. Mm-hmm. But to send your best player down because he doesn't get on base enough after he had his best week in the major leagues offensively, it's backwards, because he wore a boycott bracelet. And then to bench Brent Rooker, your only all-star from last year, because he did the same thing, it's disgusting. John Fisher is really just, he's a stuck-up little boy that never grew up, and it's a testament to that he did not earn any of his money, and he inherited it all. His parents owned the Gap, and that is how he got all his money, and he's trying to make his own money, and he's doing it in all of the worst and most disgusting ways that you can.
We've seen our fair share of awful owners in Major League Baseball, and he is really up there now to be number one.
Absolutely.
But let's end things on a little bit of a different note and turn things to another team in California. Shohei Ohtani hitting his first home run since signing his $700 million contract with the Dodgers. He hit that against the win over the San Francisco Giants. And he has had what we can only be described as the worst public image of the
year.
Not
a great start.
Not a great start for him. He was in a little bit of hot water over the fact that a longtime Dodgers fan named Amber Roman caught the ball. And as we all know, when you catch a ball, you're usually offered something by the team to meet the player, to give them the ball back, to commemorate the achievement, usually take a photo or something like that. So what happened was Roman described the situation as that the Dodgers were very, very pressuring her to hand the ball back over. And through his new interpreter, have to emphasize new interpreter with Shohei Ohtani.
Because he is.
Because he is.
Got a new employee in that position.
Ohtani said that he was, quote, able to talk to the fan and was able to get it back. It's obviously a very special ball, a lot of feelings toward it. I'm very grateful it's back, end quote. But the problem now that we face with this scenario is that Roman and her husband told a reporter for The Athletic that they never met Ohtani, and it puts the quote in a different light. Ohtani said via the interpreter that he talked to the fan. Roman is saying met is not really quite how it happened. They've been going back and forth. People have been saying that there was an interpretation issue. The interpreter got something wrong on this front. It's just his new role. There's a scandal, obviously, as we talked about with the gambling, with his last interpreter. This is just a really sad situation to look at, and just adding another piece of wood to the ever-growing dumpster fire that is his public image right now, that really is not getting better, because you know, you when you catch a ball like this, you expect as a fan, and especially knowing that she's a longtime fan, that she was going to return the ball. But to then do this back and forth with the Dodgers PR and Ohtani's guys, that you're like, oh, we met him, no, we didn't, we spoke, no, we didn't. It's really messy, not a good look, and it really does not help what's been going on with him over the past couple weeks.
I think there's a couple ways to look at this, and I'm not saying that Amber and her husband are lying. Could be, you know, an opportunity for them to keep pushing the envelope, ride the hot hand because of how bad it looks. I'm not even saying that's true. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
Yeah.
But I don't know, the way that she was like, took the picture with the ball, and like just the pure joy that you could see in her face. There's something about this that does kind of smell a little true to me. And it's very sad. I hope for Ohtani's sake, he can salvage his image because and you know, more so for Major League Baseball's sake, not so much for Ohtani. He'll be fine regardless with the kind of money that he has, but for Major League Baseball, already, you know, it's a constant topic. They have so many different difficulties branding their own league. Like, for example, there was a graphic with pitchers, and there were a lot of comments. You know, being a baseball fan, I knew all the pitchers on there, but you know, casual baseball fans could not name you a single pitcher. I believe it was Justin Steele, Nathan Eovaldi, Framber Valdez, and Zach Gallen. A casual fan, honestly, is not going to be able to name any of them, maybe with the exception of Framber Valdez. Obviously, all of the real big names that casual fans would know are injured, or they're Shohei Ohtani, and you can't really put him out there like that right now, and especially now. But for Major League Baseball, I do feel kind of bad because it's like, wow, Trout's getting older, and Ohtani was now our new poster boy, and now we have to look for another one. Well, you got Soto, you got Julio Rodriguez is a great personality to have in your back pocket. So another thing before I'm done on this topic, it seemed as though the Dodgers were whoever they sent out there to get that ball, very, very pushy.
So,
about getting this ball.
I continued reading the article where she describes the Dodgers staff, and she basically originally asked if she could keep the ball and he could sign it. And they said no. And if we did give you the ball, we would never authenticate it. So that was like first thrown never. Out there. And she said, okay, well, what is he willing to trade for? And they said two baseball caps. And she was like, okay, so what else can I get? And they threw in a bat and another ball. And then she asked if she could meet him. She was told it was not possible. They never met. That was the parameters. She has later gone on record saying she does not regret it. She said it was a lifetime experience for her, regardless at the end of the day.
Oh, for sure. It's just a negotiation.
She said, I expected a little bit more warmth. It's just sad that I had to make a decision right then and there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just a really, yeah, it sucks.
It's weird that they, like, sucks. Bargained with her. Like, they were like, yeah. Two caps, yeah. Three caps. Like, this is like a fan of your team, like a diehard fan of your team. You can't give her, like, Ohtani would sign three bats right away, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Right? I think it could totally be a translation error, though. Like, this is one of those.
Could be.
Like, I don't think the gambling one is, but this is one where, like, saying meat and like in another language so different, like Japanese, could definitely mix that up a little bit. So
very
I believe
good point.
That.
Yeah, the Japanese reporters on site apparently said that he never specified whether he spoke to the fan personally or whether the team spoke to the fan. It really just seems like an interpretation mess, which really doesn't help on top of the interpretation scandals that have been going on. It's just, you know. Hey, at least what's the guy that catches all the home runs again?
Zach Hample.
At least he didn't catch it. So we at least have that to look forward to in the world. But that is going to do it for us all here today on Nosebleeds. Thank you so much to Lauren Mondarulli for producing for us today. It has been a fun-filled episode, to say the least, full of a lot of great topics. But until next time, this has been Evan Harkin, Will Talent, and I am Maddie Bamonte saying so long, and hopefully Mets baseball gets better so I can enjoy it. Thank you so much.